Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 7, Episode 11. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Oh, hello there. How are you?
All right, so we got some fact check from last week. This is a fact check slash follow-up kind of thing, right? So I stumbled across this while I was, doom scrolling on YouTube last week. Roddenberry Archives, Enterprises A to Z. Is there an Enterprise Z? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Oh, wait. A to Z. Sorry, I said it wrong for the Americans. But this is a video that shows the making of, like, it shows what Josh and I have both experienced on our Vision Pro as we get to go and stand on these decks and the bridge, the bridge, and have the whole thing in 360 and we can look all around, right? Well, this is a video done in 2D for, just showing all the different sets and how they kind of did them all. And that was this is a follow-up on what Josh Rock was talking about, where, you could look at the Enterprise with the Kelsey Grammer Enterprise, you could look at Excelsior, we could look at the one from the two prequels that eventually became the movie, right? There was the reboots of Star Trek 2 or whatever it was called. Oh my god, that's follow-up or fact check. Yeah, so if you're interested in seeing what these various decks are, this goes through all of the various incarnations of Enterprise decks and, they pan around with the camera. And some of it's, I think a lot of it's, CGI, but it's kind of interesting to compare the sort of evolution of the various Enterprises, right? Including, because there's the Enterprise from the TV show, then there's the Enterprise from the first movie, and then the second movie, and the third movie, even though it's the same Enterprise, theoretically. It's like they reupholstered and put new chairs in every time a new director came on.
Yeah.
So, which kind of makes no sense, whatever. All right. And then the other thing we've been talking quite a bit about 3D movies for Vision Pro, and I have a question for our fans too. So I checked that none of the Lord of the Rings, not the regular or the extended versions, are available in 3D on Vision Pro. I don't remember if those movies were in 3D.
Yeah, I don't feel like they were, but I can't recall. We'd have to look it up.
Yeah, I don't think they were. And then the regular Hobbit movies are in 3D. The extended cuts are not. So, again, I don't know. I don't understand, what is the point of this randomly picking things that would be in 3D and not, right? But it's because it's interesting, why do the extended cut? Why would you, as a user, as a consumer, why would I buy the extended cut if I get the 3D quality on the regular cut? I don't get it on the extended. It doesn't make any sense. And then why is some movies that would be amazing in 3D not available in 3D, on the Vision Pro? So my question for the audience is, those of you who have Meta Quest and all the other various and sundry headsets or whatever, they obviously don't get Apple TV, but they might be a Disney app. I don't know. I'm shrugging my shoulders. Is the content on Disney available in 3D on another device other than the Apple Vision Pro? Because all of the new Star Wars, like everything from Force Awakens, if everything from Rogue One, I don't think Solo is in 3D, but Rogue One's in 3D. Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I think that's the last Star Wars movie, right? That was your time to jump in there, Jonathan.
Sorry, I was busy throwing up in my bucket over here.
Okay. So the last, so there is another, there may or may not be another movie in 3D that's available that has Sky something or other in the name of it. Star Sky.
Star something. Killer or something like that.
Yeah, Star Killer, that's one. Yeah, and so, but all those are, and all of the Marvel movies that were available in 3D, like Guardians of the Galaxy 1, 2, and 3, so a bunch of Thor movies, I think the Ragnarok one for sure, all of the Avengers are in 3D, right?
Yep.
Like the cinematic, I mean, on Vision Pro, right? So it's interesting, like obviously Iron Man and things like that, because they were way before 3D was even invented, right? And that's not true, but they. So I don't understand, like, what is the holdup, and what is it about this particular style of? I mean, okay, as far as I know, and this may be related to this, but Apple Vision Pro has a format called MV-HEVC. Which is an encoding format for taking stereo images and stereo movies, putting a left and right channel together and making them available to be watched on the Vision Pro. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe whoever owns the rights to the movies doesn't want to do it or have the other expense, because they probably figure there's five of us that have Vision Pros, right?
I mean, I guess so. I think it's kind of a weird thing, the way they decide to do things across the board. So one of the nice things that Apple did was, when they started adding 4K movies to their service, they started upgrading you free of charge, theoretically, for those things. But even that is not complete. Like, I still have tons of movies that are only in HD, even a few that are still in SD, that are available as 4K movies, but they don't have, I don't know what, they don't have the rights.
On Apple TV? Or,
like, yeah.
I mean, sorry. Okay.
So it seems like they're being a little selective about some of that stuff too. So yeah, I think it's just a little bit
inconsistent. I guess to do with the right, whoever holds the rights to the movie, right? So
yeah, but I mean, again, I think it's the same argument for the 3D stuff. It could just be that they're not, you know, the company hasn't released it for whatever reason, because they haven't digitized it the certain way, or they just don't want to put the money into it because it's just for Apple or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here, let me throw some stuff at you, okay? So, like, this is from my list that's on the show notes. I'll put a link in the show notes. I keep saying I will, but I haven't been doing it lately. But so here, like, for instance, Alice in the Looking Glass is available in 3D, but not the one that goes before that. Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania is available. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, which I think is the last Aquaman, right?
Yep.
Arthur Christmas, for example, like I mentioned before, Endgame and Infinity War, both available. Avatar, both of the Avatar movies are available. Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice is. There's a Beauty and the Beast, but it's the live action Beauty and the Beast one.
Yep.
The remake of Ben-Hur, Black Panther and Wakanda Forever are both available. Black Widow, Blade Runner 2049, which is an amazing movie on Vision Pro. Bumblebee, which I haven't seen yet. Captain America Civil War, which is, a lot of people say, is their favorite Marvel movie, right?
Winter Soldier tends to be higher.
Winter Soldier. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Civil War is good. It's really good. It'd probably be on the top tier of Marvel movies, but I think it's Civil War is probably below Winter Soldier.
Yeah, yeah. So Captain Marvel, I'm skipping through Clash of the Titans. I guess that's the remake one. All of the Despicable Me movies are available on this. Interesting ones like this one, Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's the movie from the 50s. Is in 3D. I haven't seen that one yet, but
what about all the Disney Pixar stuff? Because that, a lot of that came
some
out
of, some,
as
yeah,
3D.
Some of it is. Yeah, like I'll go through. I'll see if I can. This Dr. Seuss, The Grinch. That one there is available. Edge of Tomorrow, which I know you'll never watch because got that woman you don't like in it. Everest, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Oh, Crimes of Grindelwald. Those are in here? Oh, really? I didn't think they were, because I was looking at that box set. But interestingly, the Dumbledore one's not. I looked the other day to see, right? Finding Nemo, of course, is. Frozen 2. That's the Disney one, right?
Mm-hmm.
G.I. Joe Retaliation, Gods of Egypt, a bunch of Godzilla movies. The movie Gravity, of course, is in 3D. All three of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies I mentioned already, Hansel and Gretel, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2. Those are, that's the like 7th and 8th movie. Hotel Transylvania's are all in there. There's a bunch of IMAX ones that are available. Hugo, of course, which was a Apple gave it to us for free at Christmas one year.
Yeah.
Jackass 3, Instant 3. Why you need to watch that one, I don't know. Both of the new Jumanji movies that we talked about, the Jungle one and the Next Level, with The Rock, right? And Karen Gillan.
Mm-hmm.
The three Jurassic World movies, which are the second, the, you know, 5, 6, and 7 4, 5, and 6 of Jurassic World. Katy Perry, the movie, is available in 3D. All of the Kung Fu Pandas, right? Mad Max Fury Road, but not Furiosa, right?
Was Furiosa in 3D? Could we watch that in 3D? I can't remember.
I can't remember either, but...
I feel like it wasn't.
Oh, okay. Men in Black 3 is available in 3D. The Minions, all the Minion movies are... Impossible Mission Fallout, but not the last one, which I did see. I thought I saw that in 3D. Yeah, pretty sure I thought it was 3D, because there's a scene where they're hanging on a train as it's about to fall into an abyss, and they're climbing up through the car. You know that old trope?
Yes, Uncharted 3.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Good job, Tom.
Yeah, good job. Yeah. My Soul to Take, Noah, One Direction, This Is Us. I can get that one. Pacific Rim, both. Oh, it says you're both Pacific Rims, but I'm not sure if that's true. Piranha 3DD, of course. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, that one's worth watching by itself. I mean, come on. Topless women in 3D, isn't it?
Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales is available in 3D. Pokemon Detective Pikachu, of course. RIPD. Okay, RIPD is available in 3D.
But doesn't it just seem like the list is based on like what was a 3D movie to start with?
Well, yeah, definitely. That would be the case. Yeah. And none of these are like last four Resident Evil movies are available.
Yeah.
Ready Player One, which I mentioned before.
Like, it seems like we're talking about a sweet spot between like 2005 and 2016, yeah. Right? Like, that's sort of when.
Yeah, but you and I have seen movies since then that are not on this list, right?
True.
Spider-Man, the last four Spider-Man movies are available. Of course, The Smurfs Lost Village. I know you were dying to see that one.
Oh, so much.
Well, the Mario movies, you were mentioning the Mario movie the other day. That one's available.
Yeah, that's still on the last to-do list.
Episodes 7, 8, and 9, trying not to throw up, are available. Suicide Squad is what?
Is it Suicide Squad or The Suicide Squad?
Just a Suicide Squad.
Okay, so that's the first one.
The Margot Robbie one. Terminator Genesis, but not the last one. I'm pretty sure we saw that in 3D. We saw that in IMAX for sure.
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Out of the Shadows. Is that the new ones?
The new animated one was Mutant Mayhem, but then there was those two previous ones that were the hulking weird ones with the giant turtles. That was weird.
Okay. The Amazing Spider-Man and the Amazing Spider-Man 2. Those are the
Andrew Garfields.
Yeah. The bad guys, Boss Baby, the Croods. The Hobbit, we mentioned those ones before. I'm into the's. So the Lego Batman movie, the Lego movie, Lego Movie 2, Lion King, Little Mermaid, Marvels, The Mermaid, The Mummy, which is, I don't know which mummy that is. Pirates, Bands of Misfits. That's
Aardman.
Nick Park. Yeah, I should get that one. That's a good movie. Secret Lives of Pets 1 and 2, Smurfs. Oh, more Smurfs. There you go, John. Oh, because it's the Super Mario Bros. Yeah, it's added again. What do you do with the word "the" when you're making a list, right?
I like to put it at the end.
With a comma, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, Transformers 1, which is the one you just saw, right? It was on your thing.
Yeah.
Age of Extinction, Dark of the Moon, Rise of the Beasts. There's an Underworld one. Warcraft.
Oof, that was terrible.
Wish. I know. Wolverine and Deadpool, though, thankfully that one came out, which I would have been so pissed if that one. And I don't have Wizard of Oz on here, but Wizard of Oz is available in 3D as well, which is, I don't, they must have gone back and redone it or something, because obviously it wasn't in 3D. You know, I don't know, here's a bit of a spoiler for people. This is a sort of a tangent here, but you know the scene in The Wizard of Oz where the first part of the movie is in black and white?
Yep.
It was the first movie to ever be shown in the theater in Technicolor, right? And there's a scene where she's walking through the house. She reaches for the door. She opens the door, and she walks through the door, and all of a sudden the movie's in color. And that just blew everybody's mind away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I've watched that scene a number of times. The scene where she's walking and grabs the door from, you see her from behind, that's not Judy Garland.
Oh.
Yeah, it's another actress dressed like her, wearing black and white clothes. And the wall is painted black and white. And when she opens the door, spoilers for everybody, in case you haven't seen this movie, this is what, 1935, right? The movie actually is in color on that part of the reel. Oh. But it's just, everything's painted black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. Good trick.
Which is, you know, real good, real neat trick. I mean, like fooled everybody, fooled me up until like maybe 2 years ago when I first saw that, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, that ends the discussion about what the heck is available on 3D. On Vision Pro, but I'm curious to see, if you have I don't know if you know anybody who's got actually, I think I do. We have a family member who's got one of these Genesis things. What are they called? MetaQuest? MetaQuest, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure, why wouldn't they have movies on those and available, whatever?
Spite.
All right. Yeah?
Spite.
Yeah. So, let's move on to our headlines then, right?
Yeah.
So I've got here, this is a thing, I saw this on Blue Sky, Mike McMahon tweeted this, skeeted this, or whatever they say. It's not skeeted, we're posts, we're calling them posts, that's what the official name is. Star Trek Lower Decks Season 5 t-shirts are available, and there's a link here in the show notes for that. And they've got, they keep coming out with new ones every week to go with each episode kind of thing. So those are kind of fun.
Anything jump out at you? Anything you want to take home?
I mean, like, it's got like a, I don't know if, is that, I don't know if you're looking at the link here. The week 4 one, is that, who is that?
This is Lower Decks. They all say Lower Decks in
is cursive. That supposed to be Mariner?
That's Mariner, yeah. The one for week 1 is Boimler, and, mm-hmm. and like a half, like a profile part of his face, and it's his Lower Decks in cursive. And then the one for week 5 is Mariner. Same thing, although it looks weird because it's in shades of red, so like she looks very unfamiliar like that. And then, yeah, the one for week 7 is Tandy, so I assume we're going to get a Rutherford for week 9 or week 10. But it says that these were actually designed, some of them were designed. It says week 3 was designed by Jack Quaid and week 5 was designed by Eugene Godero.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, of course, the week 8 one has the Cerritos on the back and the crest on the front, right?
So. Yeah, and the week 8 one is actually from this week's episode, which of course we're going to talk about, but it's the pumpkin carved Cerritos from when Rutherford does the pumpkins.
Oh, the angle,
yeah.
Cool. Oh, and it's cool. They've got the like a poster, and if you go and click on it, they've got the next two, which are the last two. Oh, are we on episode 8 already?
Yep.
What? We start crying now?
Yes, yes, we do. Because okay. The show's awesome, right. And it's breaking my heart.
Yeah, it is breaking our hearts. All right. The next story here is Walmart has bought Vizio, and I don't know if you. Yeah. I was hoping that Jaime would have been on the show to talk about Vizio, but. What do you know about Vizio? It's like a streaming service, right?
Yeah, it's basically like another way to have digital movies, right?
Yeah,
but I honestly thought there was an affiliation already there, so I don't know really what. I'm just looking it up. I think it was previously like partially owned.
Had some sort of arrangement with them, right?
So yeah. Just doing a quick scan of their stuff here, but yeah, I think they were kind of like affiliated with as far as their like streaming service and their ability to like watch movies and stuff like that. I think what it is it's basically like they're built into some of the products they make, because Vizio actually makes like TVs and sound bars and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's like their hardware. Yeah,
so it's like buying a Roku or a TV that has Roku built in. It's basically you have Vizio built in, and then you can use Vizio for like streaming and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, so is this like Insignia, where you go at a Best Buy, you buy an Insignia TV, but it's actually a house brand sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't know that. Vizio is.
Or previously was
like just for them, but now it seems like that's the case. So this will be like their house brand, because yeah, you're right. The deal was just closed this week, right?
So the big question for me with regards to Walmart buying Vizio is that, you know, with the CD music and movie market of going, when we physically had to go to a store to buy a CD or whatever, right?
Yeah.
A lot of smaller communities throughout the United States only have Walmarts.
Yeah.
Right. And so Walmart was pretty much able to decide what artists would be sold in their stores.
Yep.
Right. And I wonder if that's going to happen here in this sense, right?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's not a huge issue for us, particularly here in Canada, but you're right. It could potentially lead to them deciding what you can and can't watch based upon political influences, religious views, whatever morality they want to put to it. Not that any service couldn't do that, but, you know, Walmart has.
I'm surprised every time I'm watching Disney Channel and the F-bomb is dropped, I'm just going to go, what? I'm watching Disney. Or even Apple. Like Apple, you know, like they have adult content on there, right? So
yeah, although Walmart does have a history, and I don't want to get my facts wrong, but they do have a history of making decisions based on, you know, the views of the minority, not necessarily the majority,
that's as far what, as what they're willing to at.
Stock in their store and everything else. Yeah. So, yes.
That's what I was getting at. So you're not going to get the explicit lyric CDs and stuff like that, right?
I mean, it's hard to say. It's possible that they will continue to operate this in the exact same way that it was before, or it's possible that they'll be like, nope, no, you're going to do it our way. So we'll see. But yeah, it's never good news when you get these kind of purchases, because it does, obviously, it can impinge on freedoms.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there for people.
Yeah.
So my last story here is I was watching, I've been catching up on my late night TV show watching. Now that I've cut my cable, I tend to go to YouTube to watch the monologues. I usually publish them like an hour or so after the show broadcasts, which is nice. But I stumbled across Jude Law being interviewed on Jimmy Kimmel. And it's an interesting interview because the first thing that Jimmy Kimmel raises, and this is kind of a talking point for today too, in that we're going to cover Skeleton Crew in a bit. Jude Law is one of the first or one of the only people to be in Marvel. No, what were the three? Star Wars is the third, but Marvel, he's Harry Potter, Marvel, and Star Wars. I can't remember what he was in Marvel, though. Do you recall? Because he played Dumbledore in the last Harry Potter movie, right?
Yeah, I remember that. I'm just trying to think. Oh, he was in Captain Marvel. He was the bad guy in the first Captain Marvel movie.
Oh, okay.
That's who he was.
Okay.
He was, Yon-Rogg. Yon-Rogg, the bad Kree soldier guy. Not a memorable movie, nor a memorable part.
Could you see that it was him or not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. You just clearly loved it so much you don't remember it, which is fair.
Well, I mean, so, but, well, what's it? Well, I haven't seen the Dumbledore movie either. I think I might have seen
it. I haven't either.
Yeah, and it's not available in 3D, so why would I? No, I'm kidding. I think it is. No, actually, is it? No, I don't. I don't know if it is. But it was an interesting interview. I mean, he's a pretty interesting guy. And of course, he was talking about interesting points I never thought about before. Carol would be really interested in this. But he said, like, you know, they asked Jimmy Kimmel, asked him, if, like, are there rules and whatever. He says, well, like, there's no buttons in Star Wars. It's like a rule, right? And one of the other things he said about the cinematography is that they're all shot to emulate the way that George Lucas shot the original movie. Right. So they don't, you know, you're not going to get like a J.J. Abrams take on it with all the lens flare and all that kind of stuff. Right. Because that wasn't sort of the look and feel that Lucas put into it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, they still, even in the modern movies and shows, they still use the same screen wipes. They still use the same kind of stuff.
And practical effects and all that kind of stuff, too. Right. He said it was really interesting to be like in one of the scenes we saw him in this week in the second episode was on the pirate planet. All of those aliens and droids and whatever were actually on the set.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. I know that, like with the case of K2SO and the one from, what was the one that the Fleabag lady was in?
That was Solo. Yeah. She played the droid who became the hyperdrive system for the Millennium Falcon, right?
Because she actually was on set wearing parts of the stuff, but they CGI'd her out, right?
Right.
But it's interesting to see that. And he was explaining that there's no kick on a blaster. Like usually in the movies, when you fire a gun, there's, you know, your hand kicks back. He was told, no, you just point and pull the trigger. You don't, you know. Mm. And of course, he was saying that, of course, he wasn't guilty of this, but a lot of actors who go on Star Wars stand there and go pew, pew, pew as they're shooting. And apparently there is no pew, 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 and they're not allowed to do that. So. Because I think Ewan McGregor would say when he first got on the set, he was doing the lightsaber sounds, right?
Yeah, I imagine for the first little while, they're like, stop humming.
Yeah.
That's what I'd be doing.
Unless you're Chewbacca, then you're allowed to make weird noises.
Absolutely. It's encouraged, actually.
Yes. All right. And then I'll hand it off to you for the last of our headline stories.
Yeah, nothing big, but they did put out a little teaser trailer for the Doctor Who Christmas special. Obviously, we're excited that we're going to get our first, Christmas special. They had
Chutigatwa
move that. And yes, Chutigatwa is going to be back as our Doctor. And it's a nice little teaser. It doesn't really tell you a lot, but I mean,
it doesn't tell you anything at all, really.
Well, we know who the guest star is, I guess that's something, but
who's the guest star?
She's the woman from Bridgerton, the last
that's why I don't recognize her.
I gotta be honest, like when they moved them around a little bit and they were doing like New Year specials and just sort of I like the Christmas special. There's just something special about a new Doctor Who episode on Christmas Day. So I must admit, even though it didn't tell me a lot, it still got me feeling festive about the whole thing, just because I like the ritual of a Doctor Who on Christmas.
Yeah, no, definitely. Oh, and it's on Christmas, not New Year's Day, which I think was another surprise issue the last couple of years, right?
Yeah.
We had to wait till, wasn't it the last four, the David Tennant ones, didn't they come out pretty close to New Year's Day or something?
Yep.
And then I think the last Jodie Whittaker one was also not on Christmas Day. But it's interesting, there was sort of a different take on the show. I mean, like I said, back in the 70s, they used to have like story arcs that would be like five or six episodes long. And then as they moved forward to the David Tennant era, as the new reboots, right, they kind of did one. But they always sort of did, instead of Doctor Who and his companion, they would always do a special, guest star instead of the companion, right? I think that's how Clara Oswald came into the franchise too, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I think she was actually.
I must admit, it's now becoming a little blurry. At some point, I fully intend to go back and watch some of the earlier Who's, but I'll be honest, I really like Doctor Who, but it's not my
shtick.
Not my top of my memory as far as like encyclopedic knowledge. I can do that for some of the Marvel and the Star Wars and the other stuff, Trek and that, but some of the Who kind of blends together a little bit for me, just because it is a little bit similar.
Well, the other problem with Doctor Who for me in particular was it was appointment television, right? You had to be available on Sunday afternoon to watch it, right? Yeah, and I wasn't always. So I missed a lot of David Tennant's stuff. So I'm actually going through, I think it's on Prime, it's on one of the services. Actually, we'll look at my Apple TV, hang on a sec. But I've got it in my watch list on Apple TV, and I've just started the first season of David Tennant. I got through all the Chris Eccleston stuff, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing about Chris Eccleston, I just think he didn't want to be there.
Yeah, it's pretty clear when you now know that and you go back and you watch it. I actually did that a few years ago because my son wanted to watch a little bit of it, and so we started watching from the beginning. And you can see as the season wears on, you're like, he doesn't seem like he's enjoying himself.
Yeah, but I think his approach to the doctor, it was a bit like Capaldi. Capaldi was a bit like of an angry old man kind of doctor, right?
Just taking it a little too seriously, I think. I think that was the thing I liked very much about Smith and David Tennant. It's just that there's a little more playfulness. And actually, I kind of like that about, the last couple of doctors. The other two are probably lower on my tier just because they seemed a little too serious about it.
Mm-hmm. And it was always a wink and a nod back in the original Doctors, right?
So, yeah.
And I mean, there's three Doctors I've never really watched, which is the last three before the reboot, right? After David Tennant's father-in-law, who I almost forget his name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, so, yeah, like I said, but this particular, I mean, the reason why we're not really giving much detail about what was in the trailer is because there wasn't really much detail in the trailer.
No. Okay. Other than, it's Christmas time, there's a mystery, there's some guest stars, buckle up.
Some timey-wimey stuff.
Yeah. There'll be adventures in time and space.
Yeah, so back to the main part of the show, which is where we are now, and this is going to be talking about a couple of things. We're going to be talking about... Star Trek Lower Decks, obviously, and then we'll move on to a few other new shows that came out, and then back to the last three. You don't have Solo on here, or Silo on here.
Well, we saw Silo. We didn't do a Silo from last week, right? Because Silo came out on Tuesday because of
Thanksgiving,
so there hasn't been a new episode, and there won't be a new one until tomorrow in our time. And
what?
Yeah. So
we'll be on it like midnight tonight.
We have talked Silo as far as Silo has brought us as of our recording time.
Okay, cool. All right. So moving on to Star Trek Lower Decks. This episode, season 5, episode 8, was called Upper Decks, surprisingly.
I'm glad it wasn't called Upper Deckers, because that's a different thing.
It was... what was interesting about it was all about the bridge crew, including the cold open, which kind of like, you know, sort of went, ta-da, bridge crew. And then we went through the episode. So.
Yeah, it was fun in that it was a reversal of the classic TNG episode Lower Decks, where it's what happens to the rest of the crew while the bridge crew are doing their thing. This was like, hey, what if we flipped it and do what does the bridge crew do all day while the lower deckers are doing their thing?
So, yeah. So, what's your elevator pitch?
Elevator pitch. It's always a good idea to pay attention at the morning briefing.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
That's good advice. You should write that one down.
My pitch is alien invaders, chaos and engineering, sharks fighting demons. You know, the usual.
The usual. That checks out. Sharks fighting is
internal. Both of us demons. Quoted the captain, by the way, just in case you're driving it home, transporting it home.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I liked this episode. I thought it was really fun. What I didn't like was that this is the third last episode ever of Lower Decks.
Yeah, that's true.
Time for
an exposition episode. What do you think?
Yeah, like I really did enjoy this episode. It was very funny. There was lots of good scenes, and I like the command crew on the Cerritos. They're fun characters.
Yeah,
but it just felt like. But we only have 3 episodes left.
I know. We can cry later.
So, yeah.
Tons of name dropping. Holy cow.
Oh, right? Yeah. My Easter eggs is...
and trope dropping.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start with our pew-pew-pew. What did you have for your favorite pew-pew-pew part of this?
Well, I mean, there was actually quite a bit of pew-pew-pew. And it kind of extended. I think Shaq's... twisting the heads off of Cardassians, that whole section, the dream sequence, right?
Yeah.
It was just a dream. That was probably, mind you, I like the rolling around aliens, the little the bugs that roll around and became invisible.
Yeah, the bagoons.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to pick one.
I went off with, I really loved the Anna trying to figure out the pain scale by torturing herself. That's what I had for my favorite pew pew pew. She's like, it's set to kill. Like, it just.
Yeah, she's like, come at me. Yeah.
Just her just cursing a blue streak and you know, turn it up, more power. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, I like the end character. Scene where the dude's patting her head. Nice kid.
Nice kitty. Yeah. She's just such a crazy character. I love it when they just let her loose. I really enjoyed the part earlier this season when Boimler was trying to get in her good graces and she was just going further and further around the bend. She's just such a funny, you know, like she's just the ultimate extension of the Bones character's cantankerousness. Take it turn it up 10 notches, right?
Yeah. If Bones was a cat.
Yeah, exactly. Easter eggs, holy moly, this was like your Easter egg hunt of all Easter egg hunts. So V'ger of course gets a shout out in the cold open pretty quickly, but yeah, they reference a TNG episode. They mention season 6, episode 24, The Next Phase. That's the one where Geordi and Ro are out of phase with the rest of the crew, and they have the funeral for them and everything. They mentioned the Klickitz. They have actually met the Klickitz before. That was season 1 of Lower Decks, episode 8, Veritas.
Okay.
So we did actually meet so technically Freeman shouldn't have had to remember the morning briefing. She should have remembered that from 4 years ago, but we'll let it slide. When Shax is having his nightmare dreams and he dreams he's at the Battle of Tempasa, that's actually something that's referenced in DS9, Season 5, Episode 19, Ties of Blood and Water. That's a Kira Nerys episode about this infamous battle and all the blood that was shed there. And kind of cool.
I think they kind of implied that's where he lost his eye too, right?
Yes. The devolving, so that when the crewman who is regressing, of course, that's a tie to season 7, episode 19 of TNG Genesis, one of the most infamous episodes because it's just so bat crap crazy.
The one where Janeway and Geordi turn into lizards, or the one where
no, it's the one where they start each species regresses in its own way. So some of them go primal, and some of them go like it's the fight or flight. You know, they regress in different ways, and yeah, that was just a really weird episode.
It throws back to what's the one where the original series where with Mariette Hartley in it, and they go Spock and McCoy get sent back 50,000 years into the past, and Spock starts to devolve as a Vulcan.
Yep.
I love that.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Same idea. Yep.
Yeah, so lots and lots of Star Trek references in this one. I'm sure there was more. That's I was trying to figure out if the Golem, the AI defense Golem, was a reference to something else, but I didn't have time to dig into that one. So if anybody knows more about that, please send us some notes.
Golem? Which Golem is that?
When Billups and the crewmen are working in engineering, and at one point he says, you know, when I activate this giant AI defense Golem's going to come out. And you see this robot pops out of the thing, and I was like, I swear I remember something about a Golem somewhere in Star Trek history, but I can't.
But isn't that what they called Data's clone?
That's what they were calling the thing that Picard ends up in, right? Is a golem, right?
They called it a golem, yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm sure there's more there. If you want to come play with us, come to our channel on Slack and let us know what you found.
Speaking of, did you get the names of the shuttles?
No, I didn't. What did you have?
There was one parks. I forgot the name of it. It sounded like a California park, but they also a couple of times they passed by this one called Joshua Tree 2. But I think today's shuttles were all just named after park very famous parks, right?
Oh yeah,
because Joshua Tree is a famous place, right?
Yep. They said what? What quotes did you have?
I have a bunch of them. I have Masaro, when the lake was smooth.
Yes.
I say that all the time, you know.
I mean, that is the reference I go to when I want to say things are chill.
Exactly. And then everybody dies, but it's the engineers who really live.
Yes, that's a great one.
And then, of course, I already said alien invaders, chaos and engineering, Shax fighting demons, you know, the usual.
Yep.
What do you got?
I had Ransom saying, "You got to believe in the power of exercise."
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of tropes or Easter eggs, but he does the Riker stance.
He does. He certainly does. Yeah. The other one I really liked is when Billups does his chief engineer's log. Chief engineer's log. I had a bagel for breakfast and it gave me a tummy ache, but I'm feeling better now. Anyway, nothing engineering wise to report. Okay, bye.
Yeah, that's the best one.
He's such a
character. It's interesting because I always get Billups and I conflate him and the captain's assistant dude.
Oh yeah,
her lieutenant or whatever. What's his name?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. I can't remember.
There you go. See? There you go. You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for that.
That's why you have IMDb.
Yeah, exactly. What was your big question? Do you have any big questions out of this one? Really? Only 2 episodes left?
Well, that and where's the Fisher people, right?
Yeah, I mean...
Or the Fisher creator. I thought maybe the compliment guys were going to be them. Oh, Fisher Quest is next. Spoilers! Oh, they got the names of the next two episodes on IMDb.
Oh, yeah? Should we dive into that for our discussion purposes?
Do you really, really want me to?
I mean, we can.
Well, next episode 9 is called Fisher Quest.
Yes. Well, yes.
And then episode 10 is called The New Next Generation. Anyway, so the other thing I want to point out is the assistant to Billups in this episode was the girl Charlotte Nickdale, the voice of the girl from the Australian girl.
She was from the Kiwi girl from
Mystery something or other. You know, the one on Apple TV.
Yeah. Oh, it's
not. Oh, I can click on her. I can click on her name and.
It's tell not you the what.
Same. Mythic Quest. Mythic Quest.
Mythic Quest. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she's also in Thor Ragnarok. There you go.
There you go.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, my question was just, are we going to get a two-parter to finish this? I'm going to say maybe yes.
Well, here's an interesting fact on I don't know how to say his name here, Fred Tatasciore.
Yes.
He did the voice of Shax and the hallucination of Shax.
Wow, good job, Fred. Like,
yeah. Oh, did you get not Tiana. What's her name? Tilin?
Tilin, yeah.
You get the joke at the end there? As your quotes?
What did she say? Oh, yes, because she made a joke at the end. Yes, yeah. No, I didn't.
Oh, that her parents and it got trapped in a painting.
Yeah, yeah.
I made a joke at your expense.
At your expense.
Boom.
Yeah, she really is becoming the Bazinga character of this.
I mean, they don't seem to have that guy. Oh, Stevens?
Steven? I don't know. I'm looking at all the different
characters. Yeah, Steve Stevens, I think, is his name. Is her assistant, right?
Yeah. I was looking through this list as we're going through it and just thinking, like, I wonder what would be fun to bring back. And I was like, well, so they've already kind of wrapped up some of these characters' arcs, like Peanut Hamper and some of these different characters that they brought back. And I was like, oh, you know, my favorite part of the series has been Badgie. I wonder if they could do another Badgie thing here. That'd be great. I want to see one more Badgie appearance before this is all over.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they did leave the door open.
Yeah, and we didn't mention the name drops. It was Kirk, Janeway, and Sisko. And you mentioned Geordi and Ro already, right?
Yeah.
And V'ger, of course.
Yep, absolutely.
In the famous pumpkin carving scene.
Yep. Yeah, no, again, another good episode. It just felt like this would have been a good episode 5 episodes ago, and I really kind of want them to be... I just want it to be something special. I just really want this to land in a beautiful way, because I just love this series so much. I just really want this I want this to be the best ending we've had in a while, although Picard was admittedly a pretty satisfying ending, but...
Now, a word from our sponsor.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Now, back to the show.
All right, want to move on to some Skeleton Crew?
Yeah.
Move from some Trek to some Wars?
Yeah, so Skeleton Crew, we had the first drop of the first two episodes of Skeleton Crew, which everybody's calling the Goonies.
Yeah, Space Goonies.
Space Goonies, yeah. We had episode 1 was called This Could Be a Real Adventure, which is a quote that one of them says in the show. Mm-hmm. And then we had the way out past the barrier. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I really enjoyed this episode or these two episodes. I mean, the sort of seeing how these kids live on this futuristic planet and, you know, they're obviously going to school and they have exams and, you know, the oh my God, the dream you have where you show up late for your exam and you miss the exam.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I did an elevator pitch for the first one, which was in a choice between an assessment test and a wild space adventure, the latter always wins. They really do. They do seem to be just hammering between this and Ahsoka and Mandalorian and just all mm-hmm. these shows, Book of Boba Fett, that are all set in the same timeline, post Return of the Jedi, pre new trilogy. This window of time, they really are setting up the New Republic as very unlikable good guys. Like, very officious and bureaucratic and just not fun. And, you know, so one of the things we see in The Force Awakens is that, like, the seat of the Galactic Republic is blown up by Starkiller Base. And I guess this is supposed to be like, well, they had it coming. They were bureaucrats. Like, I don't know. It's just, they really don't, like, you know, between Wim's dad, who, you know, we meet here, and he's very much like, oh, you know, got work to do. Can't play. Got work to do.
Yeah.
And then we meet Fern's mom, Farah, who's the person who comes in and does she's the undersecretary who's talking about the assessment test and everything. They're not very, like, they're just very, like, dull, boring, no fun characters.
Peanuts parents. They're going, wah, wah, wah,
yeah, wah, wah. Like, they really aren't doing a good job of making you like this system of government. So that maybe this is their way of being like, well, so it wasn't so bad that these blew up their planet or whatever. I don't know. It's weird.
Well, and the droids, you know, raising the kids and doing all the policing and schoolwork and proctoring and stuff like that, right?
So yeah.
Droids kind of run the place, right?
So the first episode starts with a beautiful homage to A New Hope, right? So we see the ship flying, and then all of a sudden, you know, instead of being a Star Destroyer, it's the pirates, right? And the pirates are attacking, but instead of being this sort of menacing, like, oh, we're grabbing you with this giant space claw and whatever, but there's so many, like, notes, right? The blasting the door open, and then, you know, the come in shooting, and, you know, it really had a New Hope, you know, Darth Vader's on the ship kind of vibe. And of course, we're introduced to Captain Silvo, and, you know, Brutus, this, you know, wolf character. Star Trek tie-in, voiced by Fred Tatasciore, who does Shax. Voice of Brutus, the wolf monster guy.
The wolf with three guns,
Wolf with three guns, yes. Mm-hmm. So that was really kind of cool. Like, and that was my best pew 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 for this episode, was that scene, because it was really like just jumping into the action and kind of sets the tone for, like, well, these pirates are nasty business, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, I like the way they kind of like blow their way onto the ship, sort of thing, right?
Yeah. And of course, the big kathud is that, you know, they're like, oh, we know that you're not just carrying, you know, groceries. We know you're carrying cash. And they kick in the door. And of course, they're not carrying anything. So then we're off and running.
One credit. Yeah.
Yeah. One credit.
Yep.
So Easter eggs. So when we hear from Undersecretary Farah about the career assessment tests, where everybody's going to be put into their little lines of what they're going to do for their careers, even though they're children. She references the great works that the Republic's going to do, the great works. The great works were from the High Republic era. The Chancellor at the time, Lena So, in the comics and the novels, is talking about how that version of the Republic will do these great works, build these things, do these things that are going to be great and stand the test of time. So that's kind of a carrying forward. The New Republic is picking up where that old Republic left off, carrying on the great works, which is, I thought, a really interesting way to tie that together for people who are reading and enjoying that part of the Star Wars lore right now. And the best Easter egg of all is what the little kids, Neil's little siblings, are watching on their holo table, because that little circus scene that they're watching there is straight out of the Star Wars holiday special from 1978.
Oh, really?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Nice.
So everyone is flipping out online going, oh my God, that's actually canon now.
That's too bad.
So yes, the, all the coked out characters on that show, the weirdness that is beyond weird. If you haven't seen it, dear God, find a copy of it. It is so cringily awesome. Please do yourself a favor. But that particular scene was a beautiful little Easter egg for the originals, the OGs.
Crazy.
Yep. Quick quotes for the first episode. If this is a bulk freighter, why is your vault magnetically sealed while holding him in the choke position? That's like such the beautiful Darth Vader homage, right?
Right, right.
And I really liked, after pushing the button, I didn't touch anything, I swear. That's actually a quote from Goonies. That's really something that is said in the Goonies movie. That's Wim saying it here, but yeah, that's actually in Goonies. I didn't touch anything, I swear.
Yeah, so the discovery of the it's been a long time since I watched Goonies, but when they discover the treasure, I guess it's a sort of parallel, right? Is that
so?
They discover in the Goonies, ship and all that?
Yeah, in Goonies, they are up in the attic of their house, the two boys, the lead characters, and they are looking through all this old stuff because their dad actually works at the local museum, and they knock over this frame, and this frame has a map in it, and they pull the map out and they're like, oh, this is a map, we should follow the map, and that sort of leads them on their adventure. So yeah, it's sort of this, you know, hey, we've discovered this thing, we should see where it goes, which is very similar to the concept of the ship here, right? They find this thing, Wim finds this thing in the forest, he tells Neil, and then the girls find out, and then all four of them show up trying to open this magic doorway in the woods. And of course, Wim thinks it's leading to a Jedi temple, and they're not sure, but, you know, Fern really wants to just get a power converter so that she can get her speeder bike working, and they in turn find themselves on this crazy ship, pirate ship, and off on their adventure. So first episode, the only question I had after it, I wrote this specifically after just watching the first episode, was, so Jude Law is clearly Captain Silvo under the mask, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
And then we'll circle back to that one in episode two, but
He does say in the interview that I watched, he's known by many names in the show.
So. Yes, yes. I guess the other Easter egg that's worth mentioning is KB. KB is the little girl who's wearing the visor, and she kind of has a very Lobot vibe. She's got that augmentation in her head, so that's kind of a little Lobot throwback.
Well, and there's sort of blue milk, or kind of like dark navy blue milk.
Yeah, I thought that too. I was like, well, it's not. Like, I mean, do they change? Is it different? Is it a different strange sea beast that they get this milk from? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't realize it was a sea beast they got the milk from. But yeah.
Well, did you remember in it was in?
Yeah. I thought it was green. It looked green to me in the movie, but
either way, it didn't look like something you'd want to put in your mouth. All right. Any other thoughts on episode one before we jump to two?
Like I said, a lot of fun to sort of see how these people live. They had amazing houses and stuff like that. And
I saw somebody online say that the way that when Wim is leaving his house at the very beginning, mm-hmm. felt very much like, what do they call it? Like somebody called it online. It was like, Spielbergia or something like that, like the way that neighborhoods look like in like E.T. and Close Encounter, like just right. That sort of generic suburbia, California suburbia. And I hadn't thought of it in the moment, but I was like, actually, you're right. That does have a kind of a Spielberg, early Spielberg kind of vibe, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Have you been to like San Francisco or
I have, anywhere? But not the suburban areas. I've been to like San Francisco proper a few times.
My cousin lives near Apple Park, right? He lives in, I think it's San Jose, but yeah, the neighborhood looked exactly like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Like it just kind of sets you a tone of like this sort of regular, could be anywhere kind of suburb. These are regular kind of kids, just to give you that grounding before they go off to the next thing, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So episode two, which is, as you mentioned, way, way out past the barrier. So at the end of the first episode, they're basically on this ship. The ship blasts off. Wim's dad sees them blast off and off they go into space. my elevator pitch was, becoming the captain is easy. Staying the captain is hard. You know, so this one, you know, they revive this broken droid to try and figure out what they can do here. And it's SM-33, voiced by Nick Frost, which was, again, another fun little, you know, gift for us who are, you know, you, I think you and I are both big Nick Frost fans, so that was fun.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they basically, Fern declares herself the captain, and yeah. SM-33 is in. I wanted to be the captain. And, you know, okay, well, we don't know how.
Should we throw these people out the airlock?
Yeah. And so, you know, then they, you know, end up rocketing off to this starport because they're trying to figure out how they can get home because they've never even seen stars before, right? Like we established in the last episode, they don't even know where they are in
spaces,
at all.
So
they go to Port Borgo and they have this whole, series of misadventures.
I'm surprised that the ship doesn't know like where it's been. Like, you know, that was a weird thing, right?
Yeah. So, although if it's a pirate ship, I guess you could say that they might have some way of wiping that out or whatever. Like
where the transponder's gone away.
Probably got rid of that kind of stuff pretty quickly so that you couldn't tell where they were. Right.
Right.
But yeah. And then there's all kinds of fun stuff in the port that they go to, which is, you know, very clearly sort of, it had a very Pirates of the Caribbean kind of vibe to it. This chaotic, mm-hmm. you know, drinking, you know, womanizing, gambling, you know, everyone there, you know, looking for a cut or a piece of the action or whatever. Except for the friendly,
Trollop?
Sure. Who, you know, sees all these kids and is like, are you children? Why are you here? What are you doing here? This is not a good place for you.
Was she being really maternal or was she trying to kidnap
him? I don't know. My impression of her was that she was genuinely trying to help while a lot of the other ones weren't. And of course, you know, lots of confusion there because they start throwing around the name of the place that they're from.
Everybody says it's a mythical place.
Yeah, they say they're from the planet At-Aten, which everyone else thinks is like, that's made up, right? And they start pulling out these, what they regard as like small change, right? Like these Republic credits that they think are for, like, it's lunch money. And for them, they're willing to, like, you know, stab children for it. So pretty interesting. You know, at one point that character who, you know, is talking to Fern says, oh, you're Linderlings from the lost planet of eternal treasure. So, again, that's obviously to be played out. But, and a nice, interesting wrinkle of, you know, well, where exactly were they and what is all this and how does this all tie together? So good mysteries that sort of build you, you know, like, why are they, like, what is this big mystery? Where are they from? And, yeah, and then, you know, of course, it culminates with them getting chucked in the hoosegow, and they end up, you know, meeting this mysterious character. Jude Law makes his first appearance at the very end there, and appears to use the Force to get the key so that he can set them free and move them on their way. Obviously,
technically Force-sensitive is the term that Jude Law used in the interview.
Sure. So Wim immediately says, oh, you're a Jedi, because he's fascinated by the Jedi. But I think it does not take a rocket scientist to put two and two together and say, well, we saw them mad at Silvo at the end of the first, the beginning of the first episode. Here we see a guy in prison fitting the same description, but without the mask, probably the same guy, probably not a Jedi. But yeah.
Why? I guess it begs the question, why would pirate planet have a prison?
I mean, in theory, you put people down there, like, well, exactly what they say, right? We're gonna send you down here, make you feel miserable, and then we'll get the truth out of you, right? Because they're trying to figure out where At-Aten is, right? It's basically a holding pen while they figure out which way they're gonna torture you.
Okay.
So the pew pew pew, I think, in this one was pretty obvious. It was SM-33 taking on all the pirates.
Yeah, kicking all the butts, yeah.
That was that was one of the most, like, probably since we saw in Rogue One, when we saw the giant droid go off, right? Like, where he's just, you know, like, he's not pulling punches. He's sending people 20 feet with a punch. It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat to watch a droid go off when you realize you see C-3PO. So, oh, pardon me, excuse me. And then you see these,
you got the Asimov, laws of robotics and stuff.
Yeah. And you see these combat droids, these much tougher droids. And they're just like, yeah, I'm made out of metal and have hydraulics. You're going to fly if I punch you, which is kind of a neat twist on that. But yeah, that scene as far as action goes, and then of course having Nick Frost having fun being the pirate robot voice is a bonus on that.
I didn't catch that. I'll have to go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
I think that's funny thing about this show, it's completely rewatchable, right?
Yeah, it's fun. Like it's funny because it is interesting that it comes on the heels, it's been months, but on the heels of The Acolyte, which was pretty grim. Like, it was definitely a darker look at what was happening. Obviously, different timeline, different circumstances, everything else. But it was a very not fun series. This is fun. And it just kind of is a nice little palate cleanse. I mean, I liked parts of The Acolyte. I didn't like everything about it. I think there was some stuff that I really enjoyed there. I thought some of the action scene in, the fourth episode was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But this just has that kind of Spielberg-y, Lucas-y, kind of Richard Donner vibe to it, which is just kind of nice after that.
Yeah, yeah.
Easter eggs. So SM-33 is theoretically Smee. Smee is Captain Hook's right-hand man and Peter Pan.
Right, okay, right.
So
okay.
That's got to be a pirate joke. They mention when they're talking about when they're asking to go back to their planet at Atten, the SM-33 says, was it the ship or SM-33 says, oh, did you mean Adalon? And Adalon is where Chopper Base was in Rebels.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's a nice little chuck in there.
Throwback, yeah. Yep. Yeah.
The pirate that shows up that starts asking questions, who's a Nikto, who's got the little barb sticking out of his head, that's Vane from the pirate episode of The Mandalorian from season 3.
But isn't he also the you're talking about the guy with the horns poking out of his head,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Isn't he also in Droids and Ewoks? Remember the Ewok cartoon, not the droid cartoon?
Not the little, I'm not talking about the little ferryman guy. I'm talking about the pirate.
No. Yeah, I know what you mean. The tall guy, right? But he's got really menacing sort of lizard-like face, and he's got horns popping out of his head.
Yeah, yeah. But there are species that we met. Like, they had those species back in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, did they? Okay, yeah. Okay.
So we know that
because they were the bad guys in the droid cartoon.
Yeah, and they were also the bad guys in... they were the bad guys. They were space pirates in Clone Wars, right? And Rebels. So, but that particular character was the one who was part of the pirate gang that attacked Greef Karga's planet. Oh,
the same guy, you mean? Same guy.
Right. Same character, okay. Same actor, the whole nine. So that's Vane.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Cool.
And the other little Easter egg was, at one point, there's a character who's a sort of middle-aged black man who's got augmentations as well. That's Jaleel White. That's Urkel.
Urkel. Yeah. I recognize him. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, Urkel. All right. We got a space Urkel sighting. Ah, excellent.
Did I do that?
You already had my first quote, which is, shall I throw him out the airlock for insolence, Captain? Anything else jump out at you?
I didn't really record quotes.
Oh, I got a couple others that when they go to the bar and they ask for lunch and they crack open the insects and pour them on top of Wim's food.
Yeah.
And then Neil says, no topping for me, please, sir. Neil's such a fun. He's such a cute character. Like, he's just the stereotype of the little sort of cherubic child you see in all those kinds of movies. No topping for me, please, sir. When Wim goes and lies down in the bed and Neil says, you probably shouldn't lay there. The dirt is really dirty. Again, I love this kid. And then when the mysterious prisoner, Silvo, at the end of the episode is talking about the key, he says, the distance between us and the key is an illusion.
Ooh.
Yes. I was like, oh, that's a good one.
There is no spoon.
There is no spoon. Which I guess, so the big question I had out of this one was, what is Ad-Aten? If it's this mysterious place that all these pirates are looking for, and also the fact that, like, the kids had clearly never seen the sky beyond this barrier that seems to be hiding planet. Like, why is a Republic planet there? Why are, like, how, I don't get it.
What are they hiding?
What is the point of all this? Like, why are they barrier hiding a planet? Is it to keep?
Well, I did see the barrier early in the episode. You could see the sort of equidistant lights, the grids, in the sky.
Yeah.
You could see the grid was there, and obviously it was there to mask or protect the people on the planet from the outside universe, right?
I should also mention one of my favorite scenes was the trained rat, the rat that was living inside of SM-33's head
and just kept coming out of the
Then, you know, then Neil's trying to encourage it, go get the key for us and like, okay, so again, moral
he
of the story,
like,
is
90% of the way there, and then, you know,
moral of the story is you can't put all your money on the rat to help you out. But yeah, you're right. Like, I think, you know, it's not by any means perfect so far. There are sort of little things you can quibble with, but it was fun. It was light. It was an adventure. The kids definitely bring some excitement to it. I like that Wim is like, this is awesome, you know, and, you know, you do get that same kind of vibe you got from those sort of classic movies of like, my parents don't get me, whether it's Fern, whether it's Wim, you know. And then you have, you know, of course, the voice of reason is Neil, who's just like, you know, why are we here? What? I want to go home. Like, my mom's going to worry about me. What about my siblings? You know, like, you see, you get all these different sort of, again, archetypical characters. And it's a nice, fun thing so far. We'll see.
Homespun Star Wars.
We'll see if they can keep this vibe going. But I mean, this is kind of what we were promised, right?
Yeah, it's typical of all the sort of you know, the high school drama. You know, like I just watched Mean Girls because, you know, Carol just did costumes for a play, and I kept talking about the characters, and I went and sat and watched it just to sort of get caught up.
The original or the new one?
The movie. Easy A. Is there a new one?
So there's two versions of Mean Girls. The original one from the early 2000s.
I watched the Lindsay Lohan one.
That's the original. There's a new version that's out on, it's on Paramount, I think, that is...
well, because they did it as a musical,
it's
right?
It's a musical, like, now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't watch the musical one, but...
Yeah, Renee Rapp in that one, yeah.
But I mean, what I'm talking about is like the whole high school drama, the new kid in school, all that sort of, you know, late for exams, and he gets sent to the principal's office, right? Yep. Like... Actually, both of them. That's where they both meet, right?
Yep. That's where, Fern and Wim, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, strong start. You know, I definitely had a good time, and, you know, hopefully they can keep this momentum up for 7 more weeks.
Let's just quickly do Dune Prophecy, Season 1, Episode 3. I have an elevator pitch.
Oh, bring it. Yeah.
Yo, dog, we put flashbacks in your flashbacks.
Well, I can't remember which one of us, it was me.
You said both were talking about the fact that there was no flashbacks in
last week. I like the flashbacks more than I like the show proper. Yeah. I wish we had more flashbacks. And I really like Jessica Barden. I really hope we get more of her. And hallelujah, the Lord does deliver. Thank you, oh lords of HBO Max, because yes, it was exactly what I ordered. This, for me, was the strongest episode so far. It was really good. And I think it was really good because I really very much enjoy that character, that characterization, that portrayal, and that time period more than I appreciate the just a bit stuttery stuff that's happening in the present of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this one far more than I enjoyed the first two, except for the first 15 minutes of the first one. So yeah, I think, you know, I was much happier this week than I had been the previous two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was good.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And it was basically like, Jonathan's talking about is so here's we're talking about the fact that this show and the movies have some parallel, and Jaime mentioned in this episode or the previous one that it might have been the last episode because he wasn't on the previous one, but that they kind of expect you to have seen the movies, right? However, the Harkonnen planet is quite different in the movies, because that's the whole, you know, shot in infrared and turned into black and white in the new movie, right? Like that, those are the Harkonnens, the Skarsgård character, right?
It is. So we see it in two different time periods. So we see it when it's little more rural in the first part, where they're like, you know, they're masquering these, you know, giant hairy whale beasts and using their products for sale and whatever. And then we also see it in the present time period of the show, which is still 10,000 years before the events of the Dune movies, where we see the older Valya character go and see her uncle, right? And there it starts to look more like that industrial...
Baratheon, her uncle Baratheon,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. We start to see more of that dark, sort of grim, still rainy, still gross, but like it's starting to feel more industrial. So I guess what we're seeing is it more on that trajectory, right?
Okay. Are these supposed to be canon with each other? Like the...
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a Denis Villeneuve project.
No, I know. But what I'm saying, though, is the Harkonnens in the movie are like they live on a completely different planet. I mean, like, you know, the Austin Butler character, you know, in the when he has the big gladiatorial.
Yeah, but I mean, theoretically, that's just 10,000 years of time passing on that planet, right?
Well, and their whole sun changes and the makeup of the planet changes.
I mean, 10,000 years is not a small amount of time.
Yeah, but it's a long time for a planet's ecosystem to devolve into a complete they'd have to have a whole evolution of people too to go through the change in the climate, right?
You're right, it's obviously there are some quibbles you could make, but it definitely feels like you are starting to sort of see both the evolution of the Bene Gesserit as well as the evolution of the Harkonnen clan. And, you know, this episode, of course, the throwback where we see what Tula did and we see what, you know, what Valya has done, like both within the sisterhood and outside the sisterhood. So sort of, but you're starting to get the vibe of like, Valya's agenda is not necessarily sisterhood above all, which is of course the title of this episode, right?
Yeah.
She's kind of got her own thing going, but
her own sister,
natural
sisterhood, right?
Well, and the clan,
what Tula does is amazing, right? You know, too, right?
Yeah, I mean, dark as hell, but yes, like she clearly is, like, you know, she takes ownership of this sort of plot when they're younger. But yeah, like I say, this was the strongest episode, and it definitely gave me more insight into like the motivations of these characters. It made me care more about what present Valya is doing and present Tula is doing. And again, of course, you know, one of the things of this show and one of the things of Dune is, you know, the whole, that, you know, thou shalt not make a computer in the image of a human. And then,
big spoiler there, right?
Yeah. So
at the end,
we definitely, you know, we had seen the extreme reactions in the earlier episode to, you know, a robot mouse. And then in this episode, we see something much bigger as far as what's going on with AI.
Grander. Yeah, definitely.
So as I say, wasn't really feeling it for the first couple, but this one definitely got me a little more in. So I'm hoping we'll see more of this and we'll get a little bit more of a banger for the last three episodes to land this thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, they've only got this is the third episode.
Yeah, three of six
more to go.
So we're halfway done already.
Halfway, we're at the hump.
Yep.
At the hump.
Yep.
Right, cool. So let's move on to our watch list and you can hit us up first, Joe.
Yeah, a couple things. So I went today, because I know today we're recording this on December 5th, and I know that it was the day that I had been told that I was going to be able to see the first project in the new DC cinematic universe. Creature Commandos was coming out on Max in the United States. But I wasn't crystal clear where we were going to get it here. The good news is we are getting it here in Canada. So if you have Adult Swim, whether you stream and or have cable service, you can watch it on Adult Swim. The bad news is that it's coming a day later, because why wouldn't it? So the first two episodes of Creature Commandos dropped on Max on today, the 5th of December. On the 6th of December, it's showing the first two episodes on Adult Swim. So I have set my PVR, I will be recording it, and I will be watching it, and I'm looking forward to it. I have seen a few of my nerdy friends posting that they did watch it, and they did enjoy it, so I'm looking forward to seeing what the first James Gunn-led DCEU project is, but once again a small kick in the teeth, because for no good reason this Max content, instead of being on Crave, even though they're supposed to have an HBO exclusive, this product is going to Adult Swim for some reason. So just a
it's not really a TV show, it's a cartoon.
Hey come on now, that's uncalled
for. I'm just channeling the folks over at Space or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, they auctioned off Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn should be on Crave for the same reason. It's not. It's on Netflix here, and we're a season behind. So, like, whatever. The other thing that I just wanted to flag is that I saw Twisters dropped on Amazon Prime here in Canada. I would imagine it's probably similar in other regions, but if you are looking for a little thrill roller coaster with some Glenn Powell action mixed in there, then...
that guy, Glenn Powell.
That's the guy's name. He's got a name. Did you know?
Wow.
He's not just that guy from Top Gun Maverick and Hitman and all that, you know, other movies that have come out this year. But, cool. Yeah.
All right. And I was watching the Twisters thing, and apparently there's a new film coming out. It's going to be in IMAX, which is a movie called Becoming Led Zeppelin. It seems to be lots of interesting clips and stuff like that from the actual band, some home movies, you know, showing John Bonham and his son Jason, as well as, you know, early performances and interviews with the surviving members, John Paul Jones, Robert Plant, and Jimmy Page. So that's kind of interesting. And the tie-in for me is, I can't remember which was first, but I saw both of those, this movie and A New Hope, before it was called A New Hope, in the same theater, pretty much in the same seat at the Varsity downtown Toronto when Song Remains the Same came out, same year as Star Wars. So
nice.
Those were two big movies in my 17-year-old brain, right? And the last thing here, I posted to our Slack channel a couple of days ago. I stumbled across this on one of the socials, but this is on Instagram, this link I've got here. And it is, what if HAL 9000 was run the same way as our current digital assistants are? So when, you know, Dave is trying to get back in the ship and Hal's locked him out, you know, he's like, open the pod bay doors, Hal. And Hal responds, I think you said, you know, fried fish, you know, as our, you know, famous digital assistants will misinterpret what we're saying. And just, it's a good 5 minute long exchange between Dave and Hal. But instead of Hal answering as the movie, you know, happens in the movie, it's basically as if Alexa, Cortana, Siri, or who's the other one?
There's a new one.
I guess Google Home Assistant, whatever that's. Oh, yeah, Siri, Hello. My iPad just lit up. Hey, Siri, how are you doing? For what time, she says. Sorry, I don't understand, she says. Oh, interesting.
Open the pod bay door, Siri.
Well, I have my speaker turned down. Maybe I should turn it up and see what she's trying to say to me here. Hey, Siri, tell us a sci-fi joke. And she can't tell it to me. She says, I tried to break the ice on my first day of practice. They kicked me off the hockey team. That was a sci-fi joke?
That's not so much sci-fi as it is a hockey joke.
Can you tell me another science fiction-related joke? I lost my voice once. I couldn't tell how annoying that was. I couldn't tell you how annoying that was. Okay, thanks, Siri.
I think she's not doing so hot on the sci-fi jokes.
She keeps... The nice thing about it is now is my iPad's running the beta of iOS 18. So whenever Siri gets woken up, I get this sort of glow around the screen.
Mm.
Siri, go away. I got to wonder, like, how many times does Apple have on their server somebody saying, Siri, F off, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, the number for me is pretty high.
Yeah.
And then she says, I don't respond to that. I'm like, well. You still turned off, really? Didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah,
mine's saucy. She's got an attitude.
Yeah, well.
I can't remember. I was listening to a song in my car the other day, and the song seemed to be triggering her. And I was like, just stop listening. I'm like, is there a way to delete you entirely? Like, please just stop.
So I have a question for you. So do you listen? Do you use Apple Music?
No, never.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I mean, I do it to the extent that I have my library of my own things that are on, like, that I use through Apple Music, but I don't play Apple Music, the service.
No, I know. So they've published their Apple Music Replay for 2024, right? Mm. To show you the
Spotify Wrapped kind of thing.
Yeah, and Twitter does the same thing, and all these services do it. However, I mean, I probably use Apple Music, or we should probably wrap up the show. Let's finish this off. But I use Apple Music once or twice. I don't listen to music during the day. I usually listen to the radio and stuff like that while I'm working and stuff like that, right? So, but if a new album comes out, or if I want to listen to a Beatle tune, or I want to listen to some Emerson, Lincoln Palmer, and I want to hear like what it sounds like in the proper stereo or remix or whatever, I'll, you know, sometimes I'll go doom scrolling on Apple Music, but most of the time I'm looking for spatial stuff, right? But spatial audio stuff, I mean. And it reported that I've listened to this easy listening like music for most of the year, like, you know, 20,000 hours. And I swear to God, I have not even, like, I didn't even have Apple Music turned on at those points in time. So I have no idea where it got unless it was like when the puppy was new, we found a dog mix that you could play for the dogs to help them sleep, you know, like when, you know, that could be maybe that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
But it's got me listening to this stuff for like hours and hours and hours. I'm like, no.
That's funny.
You know, and then around September, of course, it's the David Gilmour new album. Well, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So if I look at my top albums, they're correct. But this other thing, I think maybe it was that puppy mix now that I think about it.
There you go. So there's something.
Anyway. Yeah. Okay. I guess. So on that note, let's, Jonathan, people get in touch with you. Where would they find you?
Well, you can look for me on Instagram as @JPKNews or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on all of the socials, mostly Blue Sky these days and Threads, and occasionally on Instagram. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye. Oh, one thing before we go. I've always said and seen when we wrap up after we say our goodbye parts, and usually cut that out of the broadcast, right? Or the mix, right?
Yeah.
However, sometimes it's people have argued with me saying it's end scene or and scene. I have always thought from improv and from watching Saturday Night Live and stuff like that, it's and scene. And today in Lower Decks, he said and scene.
Take that, people.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. If you have feedback or questions, you can get in touch with us on the website. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future. Welcome to the after show.
Yo.
I was going to look up that Apple Music dog, not now and then. I was listening to Now and Then today. I saw an interesting thing. So it's funny. I don't know how I stumbled, again, doom scrolling. I stumbled across this thing about the Beatles and the Get Back movie, right? Mm. And because what they had done was, this was sort of a follow-up to the Get Back movie that they did. And I guess the Let It Be remix that they did as well. Apparently there was a microphone. The film crew had a single microphone, and they were recording the Beatles on this thing, like sort of just getting the room noise. And so in the music, in the microphone recording was, the crew talking, and, you know, people pouring tea, and, you know, John would be talking to Paul, and George would be noodling on his guitar in the background. And you really couldn't make out what John Lennon was saying. Right.
Yeah.
And so what what Peter, oh, I'm drawing a blank on his name, the guy from Weta, Peter Jackson?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Peter Jackson, he found this software, or he started working on this software where they could isolate the different parts of the mix. And that's how they actually ended up doing the Revolver album, just got remixed by Giles, right? Mm. And it's basically, because the way it was really done was it would be bass, drums, and guitar on one channel, and the vocal would be on the other channel, and maybe, like, you know, a little bit of instrumentation, like a tambourine or something like that, right? Because the original stereo recordings were very separated, right? Like, they were so separated with that, you know, they would be exclusive to both sides, right? So what they were able to do with this software, because they were recorded live, right? Like, so the Beatles would be playing, the Revolver album is the Beatles performing live, if you think about it, right? But with the software, they're able to isolate Ringo's bass drum and his snare, and they can make a separate mix of the drums, and they can do a separate mix of the bass, and they can do, you know, so they can separate all these parts using machine learning and, you know, bits of AI. And in fact, that's how they did the Get Back series and Let It Be, is they isolated all the vocals and stuff so you could have John Lennon talking to Paul McCartney with George playing in the background, but they could play with the mix so you could hear them distinctly. That's how they did that Now and Then song, which is why I went back and listened to it again today. They actually had, they originally had a tape of John singing that song, and when they did that arc was it anthology series, yeah, right? Yeah. They tried to do those three music. They had this third song, but it was so muddy, and it was like a second or third generation. Like, you know how when you dub from one tape machine to another, you lose quality.
Yep.
Right. So this was like a third or fourth generation that they had, and they got it from Yoko and whatever. And they tried to work with it, and back then, like, it was in the late 90s. When did they do that? Early 2000s? Late 90s?
Yeah, that feels like the window. I want to say late 90s.
Yeah, well, George Harrison was still around, right? So they really couldn't get anything amazing from it. So what they did was they took the software. By the way, they ended up calling the software system, they called it MAL, M-A-L, which Paul thought was really interesting, because their assistant in the studio, you see him, like a guy banging on the anvil during Maxwell Silverhammer. Mm-hmm. That's MAL, their longtime roadie slash assistant, right? Hmm. Anyway, he was like their technical guy, kind of went around with them. But so that's how they did the Now and Then thing, was they actually went and took Sean Lennon, the younger, he's the youngest one, right?
Julian's the older one.
So he went and found the original tape that his father had made and gave that to Peter Jackson. And they were able to separate out the piano and the vocal, which is why, and McCartney says it was like day and night compared to what they were working with back in the day, crystal clear, right? And that's how they went back into the studio and decided to finish the Now and Then. They used George's parts from you know, the early aughts or 2000 or 90s, right? Late 90s. And Ringo and Paul re-recorded their stuff for this. Now and Then. So
cool.
Yeah, so it's interesting that, you know, the reason I bring this up is because I've heard a lot of people bashing AI, you know, about, you know, and you know, machine learning, but if it wasn't for those technologies, we wouldn't have this new Beatles song, we wouldn't have, you know, be able to watch Get Back and Let It Be, right? So, which makes me think now, actually, I wonder if I should take some of my crappy tapes and fix them up. Well, because I've done some live recording in the last couple of years, and there's one performance I did, which I've never published, but I did with a bunch of guys from work. We had a talent show, right? And we did three songs and they were recorded, but they were a bit muddy, you know. So yeah, there's some. I need some overdubbing, which is what, you know, my heroes like Frank Zappa would have done, right? Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Got my Spotify Wrapped thing this week, like everybody else did.
Oh yeah, how'd that go?
I don't listen to Spotify a lot. It's not top of my list. I have a huge catalog of actual physical media here that I tend to enjoy a lot more. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it was very funny because the results reflected, like, the two things that I didn't have that I did at the time. I have half of it now. So it was two basically things that I was listening to. It was comedy, because there's a few comedy mm-hmm. albums that I don't have physically. And it was mm-hmm. Katie Tupper, who's one of my favorite Canadian artists that I've discovered in the last year. And I was lucky enough to go see her live this summer and buy her album and meet her. And so now I just spin her record when I want to listen to her. But it was funny because it was literally like all comedy and one artist. I'm like,
so where do I find my Wrapped?
If you log into your Spotify, if you go to Spotify,
yeah, I'm on the app.
It should say your Wrapped is ready. Basically, it shows up on your homepage. Oh. It should tell you.
It made for Tim Mitra here. My Steely Dan mix.
Yeah. So it should just come up. Let me see.
Maybe because I don't turn it on that often.
So at the top of the page, it should have like your icon, and then it says blah blah blah, blah music.
I see a wrapped icon. Yeah. Here.
So press the Wrapped icon, and it'll show you your Wrapped for the year. It'll show you like what you listened to the most and what you were interested in the most.
So top tracks of 2024 is what I listened to.
Yes. It's not everybody's. It's yours.
Well, this makes sense because Taylor Swift is up here quite high because that, you know, we have a family member who's discovered Taylor Swift.
You have a little girl who loves Taylor Swift.
Yeah. So let's see. Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily I don't listen to Spotify all that often, so I don't think the other half does either. So yeah, don't get it.
Yeah, it was funny for me because that's kind of what I got was, you know, it to me was an indication of I don't use this as much as probably I should. Now, it's a family plan. It gets used by all of us. So I think collectively we probably do fine. But yeah, it was very funny. I saw somebody, one of my friends post on social media today and said, this is my Wrapped. And it was a picture of a stack of CDs. I was like, yep.
Yeah.
It was, here's mine. It's 500 vinyl albums and 1,000 CDs. And yeah. And again,
my letterbox page. Yeah.
Yeah. I go spend the money. I go see the artists. I go and buy their stuff and, you know, buy a t-shirt, buy a record, you know, buy a CD, make it worthwhile.
Yeah. That's how they get paid.
Yep. So yeah, again, it was one of those funny, like they make such a big production of it. It's unusual this year because, you know, for the past few years on Spotify as a Spotify artist. So if you are a content creator, it sends you your Wrapped for what other people do mm-hmm. on your platform, and with your material. And so as the exec producer of a podcast, not this one, but for work, I got all that access to information, but since I've left my job, I don't have that anymore. And it's kind of, you know, I'm like, oh, but I want to see the numbers, you know, like, is it, cause it tells you like how many countries you're played in, what countries you're most popular in, you know, all these kind of analytic data pieces. And it's fun to know the data. Right. But I found it much more satisfying as a content creator than I did as a content consumer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, I have analytics on all the things, you know, apps on the App Store and websites and stuff like that I've been looking at for years.
And the story is everyone loves podcasts.
And nothing, well, it's, I gotta say though, I was gonna say, like, it's amazingly how long it takes for things to get going. Like, More Than Just Code took off for a while, and because we haven't been doing episodes, we're kind of losing audience there. But it's in my brain, can't get it out. Oh, yes. It's amazing how many Star Trek related people I have following me on Blue Sky all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like within the last week or so.
Did you create an account for Spotcast?
I did end up creating one for Spotcast because people make starter packs, right? And a lot of times the starter packs are related to a particular interest mm-hmm. or genre, mm-hmm. and they don't want, like, I had to make some Spotify accounts for some of my applications that I made for iOS. Yep. And publish them. And then I also had to make, so I made a Spotcast one. I think I made one for More Than Just Code too. I think I did. And actually, I think I have a starter pack for my, so when you guys come over, I've got starter packs to throw you into. Cause I have one for let's go to my profile and see what I've got. I've got a starter pack for, obviously I've got the Vision OS starter pack. I've got the indie apps. I know. And you know, why I called it, I know.
Yeah.
That's because I had to make these app accounts, and then I've been putting friends of mine who are also indie developers. I made one called Podcast Friends and Guests, and I put all the people that have been on More Than Just Code. So this is a spot for you and Jaime when you finally do come over here.
Yeah, no, I did. It's been on my to-do list this week is to finally move it over, because I think everyone needs to get the hell away from Twitter. So I'm on board. Yeah, so I'll be there. Just
I think Spotcast has an account in this. I should probably add Spotcast. Wow, what do you know? Yeah, so I didn't add Spotcast to the podcast list, but then I saw some Star Trek podcasts, and I said, "Hey, would you mind putting me in?" And people are adding us, right? So,
nice. So
what happens when you come over to Blue Sky?
A kinder, gentler community.
Well, that plus you find these starter packs, and you just hit. There's a button at the top. You hit all, and you're following like 150 people related areas or interest to you, right? So
nice.
That's the benefit of it.
All right. So now I know I need to get this new browser for my computer. Arc. I need Arc, and I need Blue Sky. Yeah. That's all. I'll add those to my to-do list.
Yeah, and actually, I need to close my last closed tab because I made a mistake of closing that one. I didn't want to close it. Yeah, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, and there's an app or an extension you can add if you're using Arc, or I think now Safari as well, which I use every now and then, and it's called, I think it's called Sky Blue. And what it does is it looks, you go to your follower page, your follow page on Twitter. And it looks at, it goes through each of the people you follow on Twitter and finds out if they have an account on Blue Sky and adds them to a list, and you can hit follow, or you can follow all of them that way. So, I mean, I'm following 1,000 people, but because I think 500 of them have already created accounts, it was super easy to find those 500 people to follow.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what did I say back in beginning of November, before the election, I had roughly 200 people following me. Today, I have 2.2 thousand people following me.
Nice.
And I'm following 1.2.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter, back in its heyday, so I'm going to say early 2010s, was a terrific source for breaking news, sharing things, but it has just gone so precipitously downhill. And, I think like a lot of people, I had a half decent audience on there just because of the work that I was doing. And I didn't want to just necessarily give that up. But I think it's time. It's definitely time for a lot of us to just go. My son came up the other day. He came upstairs and announced that he is clearing social media. The only thing he intends to keep is Facebook, and the only reason he's keeping Facebook is for Marketplace. He's deleting his Twitter, he's deleting his Instagram. He's like, it's just wasting too much of my time, and I want nothing to do with it. And I told all my friends, if you want to get in touch with me, text me or don't.
Like a human being, yeah.
So, I mean, it's very healthy. I mean, obviously, I still use Facebook because that connects us to so many of people, like friends and family around the planet.
Well, I mean, like anybody that's in like all of my direct relatives, you know, they don't understand anything else.
Well, that's
right?
It. So. And that's kind of the boat that I'm in is like, you know, it's where my mother-in-law is and she wants to see pictures of the dogs and the kids. So it is what it is. But, and you know, again, my Instagram, I appreciate anybody who comes and has a look, who's a fan of this show, but really I use it primarily as a source for just kind of the fun stuff that I do. That it's not really family or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's photography. So yeah, I mean, it'll be kind of nice to have a space on Blue Sky where hopefully I can talk again and not feel like it's so laced with vitriol and negativity.
Well, it's funny because I spend a fair amount of time these days on because I'm promoting product and stuff like that on the socials. So I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on, you know, Threads. Okay. Threads I go for entertainment. There's a lot of good, you know, music and movie trailers, stuff like that on Threads. I get more entertainment stuff there, comedians, that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas Threads is more, you know, Twitter-like, right? But occasionally I'll go over to Twitter, and it's amazing. The tone is so different.
Yep.
It's just like, everybody's out there to just poo on each other, right? So,
yeah, it's become so very toxic. And, you know, and again, even Instagram, like I really enjoyed what Instagram was pre-Meta, because I used to be a photographer and I like good pictures, and now there are virtually no pictures. So
really?
Yeah. I mean, it's become reels, right? It basically, when TikTok came along, TikTok started really pushing more short form video, and that really just changed the game, and it changed how we, you know, we're taking in this information. And now you see the cascade of what TikTok brought. It's changed how Instagram works. It changed how Facebook works. It changed how YouTube works. And so, yeah, I just, I find that I find it a little disappointing, because I liked Instagram for the photography of it. And now it's basically just nonstop commercials and nonstop videos, right, which are fun. Right. And again, like, I do follow, as you mentioned before, Tim, the late night hosts. You can watch bits of their monologue. You can watch, you know, clips from your favorite shows and stuff like that, or trailers. They'll let you know that that's coming. Again, it's good stuff, but it's not why I got the service. So, you know, what is going to replace that eventually? I'm not sure, but, hopefully something does, because it really has just morphed into a it's a domestic spying service using video, as opposed to a foreign spy service that is showing you videos, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a necessary evil if you're in promoting products and stuff like that. Right.
So
yeah. All right. I think we should wrap it up. I gotta take my car to the garage and park it outside so they can change my winter tires in the morning.
That would probably be a very good idea.
Yeah.
Well, with the snow and all. Alrighty. All right. Well, hopefully we'll get Jaime back next week. And yes, penultimate episodes.
Yes, this is true. Yes.
And find out what he thinks about Skeleton Crew.
Yeah. Well, he probably was, you know, lamenting it wasn't like Paw Patrol, but, you know.
Yeah.
They can't all be Paw Patrol. Although
I know, as we share our love of Pacific Rim, Jaime and I, he loves a good robot punching things, so I think he'll really dig SM-33.
I gotta say, Pacific Rim, both movies on the Vision Pro in 3D.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in. I'm just, if someone wants to give me a Vision Pro for Christmas, Santa Claus, anyone?
Well, there might be a hand-me-down one in the future.
down the road somewhere, yeah.
Yeah,
all right.
Talk at you later. Bye.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.